This is Listen to the Editors, a series of interviews with journal editors to unveil the trends in research for operations and supply chain management. I'm your host, Yuri Gavronsky. Today we are interviewing Dr. Christopher S. Tang. Dr. Tang is Distinguished Professor at the University of California, Los Angeles. He holds the Edward W. Carter Chair in Business Administration. His early research focused on mainstream operations management problems, such as production planning and control, inventory models with yield uncertainties, design and control of flexible manufacturing lines, and capacity configuration problems. Dr. Tang expanded his interest in research, working with marketing researchers on production planning and promotion, joint pricing and production decision-making, and advancing booking. He continued his integration with retailing in the exploration of joint operations decisions and assortment planning, consumer shopping behaviors, and product pricing. His research now spans different areas that include global supply chain management, retail operations, and social business operations. His current interest focuses on social innovation for developing countries, looking at ways that companies can operate in the environment, doing good and doing well at the same time. Good afternoon, Dr. Christopher.
Good afternoon, Yuri.
Thank you very much for joining us today. I'd like to start with some highlights about the Manufacturing and Service Operations Management Journal, where you serve as the editor-in-chief. First of all, how do you read the mission of the journal?
Thank you, Yuri, for having me. The Journal Manufacturing and Service Operations Management, or MSOM in short, is founded in 1999, has been around for 20 years, and the mission of the journal is really started from the focus on manufacturing, and then now we actually evolve into service management, and now we also try to get into the field of technology management as well.
Do you favor any type of research, empirical, analytical, any particular area that you look for?
Yes, I think that if you think about what research is about, is try to understand the truth. So I think in the past, the origin of this journal was is a informed journal. So we actually, our foundation is more on the operations management, operations research, more mathematical analysis. But I think that as the field has expanded to incorporate other issues such as sustainability as well as social responsibility, some of the research methods is limits what we can do. So now I think that our community now begin to embrace multi-research method. That means that includes the traditional analytical research method, but now we publish much more empirical research work as well as field-based research and also behavioral lab experiments types of research methods as well.
What can you say about the editorial board? I mean, how do you design the editorial board for this particular journal?
Well, I became the editor-in-chief in 2015. So this is the informed journal. So basically all the editors, the maximum term when we can serve is 2 terms. So that means it's 6 years. So since I had the privilege to serve as an editor, I try to make the journal more inclusive, in particular in the area of gender issues and also global issues. So basically, that's over the last 5 years, we want to make sure the editorial board have the right expertise that cover different research methods and also different research topics. And also that we also want to include editors, associate editors in particular in different geographical regions. And also that we want to cover both genders and also that in terms of different business schools as well as industrial engineering and operations research department as well.
Well, if I understood correctly, your term started in 2015, right?
Yes. So it will end December 31st, 2020.
What would you like to see accomplished during this period as your tenure as the journal editor-in-chief?
Thank you very much. I think it has been a privilege for me to have this opportunity to serve the journal. Since I started my editorship position in 2015, my goal was try to make the journal more global, meaning the editorial boards will be more global, and also the authorships is also more from global universities. Also, at the same time, I also want to make sure that our journal publish more relevant journal articles. In the past, I think that we tend to focus a little bit more on the mathematical side, but now I wanted the journal to also embrace relevant research, and also, of course, without compromising the rigorous analysis, but also want to inculcate some of the innovative ideas in the articles. The other one, I've been very fortunate receiving the support from our community. Our journal was listed in the Financial Times since 2017. So I think that, and also on top of that, I also want to increase our submission rates so that we can actually can support our community better. So over the last 4 years, our submission rate has increased from close to 300. Now we're going close to 600 per year.
So, and those 600, how many do you publish?
Our acceptance rate is around 13 to 14%. So this benchmark is consistent with most of the top journals in our field. And also that is also consistent with the informed journals as well.
So how many of those papers are rejected in the desk rejection phase?
For the desk reject, it varies from departments to departments, because we have the departmental structure. So basically that I only handle the special papers, but most of the papers will go through different departments. So I think it varies between maybe 10 to 20%. Those are desk rejects.
So you personally, as an editor-in-chief, you don't desk reject, is it?
No, not necessarily, because I handle other types of papers. For example, with some of the papers, they don't belong to any departments. It will come to me. So, and then depending on the types of papers we handle, occasionally it doesn't fit the journal, or it's not really rigorous enough. So sometimes I also desk reject as well.
For example, if it's a major fault in the paper, it's not meant to be submitted to anywhere else, you just discard it.
Right, because sometimes it may not be a good fit. So, for example, let's say some of the papers, they focus on a particular company study, but then they use basically a survey, interviews, because that this is an informed journal, so we still publish more rigorous analytical analysis. So, without any form of analysis, it may not be a good fit.
Let me understand that. So, even if the paper has, for example, a survey or a case study, it has to have at least some type of analytical model behind, or that's not necessary. It's just the fact that it's based on a single firm, and then it doesn't make any contribution to the theory that you reject.
Well, it depends. I think if a single firm is fine, it depends on the research questions, whether it's novel or not, and also depends on whether the analysis has some rigor to it. So, for example, in a single firm, you can do a rigorous survey studies, and you can actually run either you can do event studies, or you can do some form of benchmark comparisons or some form of analysis. Without any form of analysis, is not a good fit to this journal.
Could you walk us through the editorial process? What happens the moment the person hits the submit button to the website?
Okay, when the author submits the article to our website, it will first go to our managing editor. Our managing editor will make sure that the format is correct. More specifically, we also run through a check process to make sure that there's no duplication, make sure there's no perceived plagiarism. Could be self-plagiarism or plagiarize other articles. So we want to make sure that is properly done. Also make sure that the paper is remain anonymous. The author will have a single blind process. That means that the authors do not disclose their identity, so we want to make sure the paper is properly done. After that is passed through the process, then it will send it to the appropriate departments, and the department editor will do the first check. And then after that, if it's a fit the journal, then they send it to the associate editor, and then the associate editor also take a quick look to see whether it fits or not. If it fits, then they send out to the reviewers. So after the reviewers usually take around 60 days to come back, then the department editor will communicate with the author about the outcome.
Okay, and then if the author, for example, gets an opportunity to revise and resubmit to the journal, it goes again to all this process. Goes to the department editor and then to the reviewers, all the reviewers again, or it's a different process when in the second round?
It depends on the outcome. In some cases, if it's a major revision, then it will go through the whole process because we want to make sure that what it need to be addressed is being incorporated. If this is a minor revision, then in case that we don't necessarily need to go back to the whole team to save time. So for MSOM, since I took over in 2015, I changed it to the policy, what we call 2+2+2. That means that we only use two reviewers. And also is two rounds of reviews. That means that the final decision will be made within two rounds. And also that some cases it was rejected, we also allow for reject and resubmit. So that means that the author had a second more round to resubmit it again.
And what was the goal of this new policy? I mean, it's to speed up the process or to not I don't know what why did you implement this new policy?
The underlying reason for me to do that is to make sure that the process can end one way or the other. Because I think as an author myself, I have encountered papers that drag on for years, which I found is very unproductive for the authors or for the editorial board. So in the case, that's especially the 10 o'clock is rather short, and I want to make sure that we're being fair to the community.
Okay, that's a good insight. So can you describe what an author should think before starting a restart the question. Many of my colleagues now say that authors and should think about their target journal before starting the project. I'm not exactly sure how does that work. I understand that we have a range in mind, but I never really started a project thinking about a journal, a single journal. Okay, we start, but again, let's assume that MSOM is in that range or is the target journal. What an author should think before starting a project for targeting your journal?
I think this is a personal choice. In my mind, one should not start the project with the journal in mind. And I think the most important part of research is about whether you're working on a meaningful project or not, not the journal. So that is my personal view, right? Assuming that an author want to focus on a particular journal, in this case will be MSOM, for instance. And I think that they have to take a look at what kind of journal, what kind of papers that this journal has been publishing. Because in the past, I received paper submissions that actually the author does not really realize that our journal focus on more analytical kind of work. Either could be empirical, could be analytical, it could be a behavioral lab experiment. So I think that they should take a look at what kind of papers this journal has been publishing. That could be a good indicator. That's point number one. Point number two is that I think all journals now they're looking for new ideas. Because research, I think that we need two types of researchers. One is someone come up with a novel ideas, and then the second type of researchers is come up with more rigorous analysis. So we need both types of work so that we can really build a healthy ecosystem for a research community.
I see. And that's something that I sometimes struggle with, the idea of novel ideas. Your idea is expected to entail discussion with previous research. What are the limits? How new ideas could come from entail a conversation with previous research? I understand that you should acknowledge previous knowledge and previous studies, but is there a limit for that? I mean, is there a way that in the limit a person should simply disregard the previous research and start something new?
I think it depends on the subject matter. In some cases, some of the subject is truly new because the problem did not exist before. So the relevant literature is more limited, but it may be related to other areas. So let me use a couple of examples. Yeah. So for example, if someone looking into the idea of blockchain and the new operations, and the blockchain technology did not exist before. So therefore, the amount of literature in the same area is limited. So I think that they can talk about in terms of the underlying technology. Of course, they need to cite it. But then it's how it's being used, applied to operations. That could be quite new. So in the case, I think it depends on the subject. The other topic I would like to mention would be like in terms of automation and advanced robotics, how it affects the nature of work. So this is a hot topic, and this kind of technology did not exist before. And also how automation affects the human workforce is also very new. So I think there are many ways to examine these issues. And I think that that is something that the journal editors should embrace this kind of novel ideas.
Changing the topic a bit, you just mentioned that MSOM is now listed on FT50. FT50 is the Financial Times 50 more relevant journals in the field. It's a ranking as all other rankings. What's the importance of rankings for an author to seek a journal for a publication? I mean, do you believe that authors look at those rankings for publication, for choosing the journals where they are sending their research?
Well, I think that's in most universities, I think they do care about the type of journal they publish in. So, but I think in general, I think they should focus on the quality of the papers, not the journal. But the truth of the matter is that most universities, in particular, a lot of administrators, even senior members, they do take that into consideration. So in my mind, even the visibility of the journal should be the byproduct. If you do good work, you publish relevant and innovative work, then the ranking, citation, impact factor, Financial Times should be the natural consequence. So I don't think that we should focus on that, but I think that should be a byproduct in my mind.
Okay. But in the ongoing operation of the journal, I mean, you mentioned that you aim at increasing the submission levels of the journal. That's a shorter term KPI, right, for the journal. I mean, the number of submissions you can monitor month to month if you want, or something like that. What are the indicators, the performance indicators you look in the short term of the journal?
You mean long term or short term?
Short term, sorry. In the short term. I know that long term impact factors and belonging to rankings are more long term, I assume. And then on the short term, I assume that there are other indicators that might predict those longer-term indicators. What do you and your editorial board look at in terms of indicators?
Right. So in the long term, as you mentioned, that impact factor and also article influence score and also citations are the long-term measures. In the short term, I think that the number of submissions could be key, and also the type of submissions from top universities could be another indicator, and also that in terms of the types of articles they submit to the journal is also another indicator. So that means that I look for articles are the authors focusing on more refined research based on traditional topics, or they focusing on some new areas, new topics.
Do you look at the downloads of the papers?
Yes. With the downloads, now I think that in 2018, MSOM has close to 26,000 downloads. 26,000, yeah.
Okay. Do you have any breakdown of these downloads per per country or per region of the globe?
No, I don't have the data.
Okay. And I mean, you don't access, you don't have access, Informs doesn't provide you that for you, or you don't have that data?
I do not have that. And Informs, I think they compile the data, but have not asked for it.
In terms of future of the journal, would you have any open calls for papers, any special issues in mind that you'd like to highlight?
Yes, I've been pushing for different novel ideas. So I think there are a couple of special issues is underway, and also that's the new issues that we have called for papers. For the recent issues, special issues were social innovations in developing countries. Then we have one on human-centric operations that deal with how human interact with automation and robotics. And then we have another special issue related to online platforms and in the sharing economy. So that is underway. Then right now we have two special issues that we call for papers. The first one is smart operations in smart cities. So that deal with topics such as IoTs, drones, and different type of smart operations. And then we have one is going to call for is we call operations fintech, because we also want to look into the idea of how fintech and operations interact. So that related to global financing and mobile finance, P2P lending, and using some of the underlying technology such as blockchain.
Regarding this call for smart cities, smart operations, what's the deadline for the submission?
October 1st, 2019.
And for the operations and fintechs?
That is next year. I think it's September 1st, 2020.
Could you educate us in terms of what is a fintech? What is the difference between a highly automated bank and a fintech?
Okay. For the traditional banking operations, they have branches, they have physical locations, and they have the traditional credit score rating for the lending operations. For fintech, is bypassing that kind of constraints. So, for example, in China, like Alibaba, now it's the fintech units called Ant Financials. They can actually do mobile payments. Mobile lending, and also the self savings and insurance services using the mobile phone. They don't have a branch. So that is fundamentally different from the traditional banking operations. And also in terms of lending, in many fintech operations, they do not need the traditional credit score. They can actually use your other type of information available on the social media. So for example, your Facebook profile, that could be utilized as a social credit score to determine whether you're credit worthy or not. So it's completely using the information as a proxy of all this lending and operations.
And any discussion on the limits for that? I mean, the ethical limits or the privacy limits for those uses?
Absolutely. So some of the paper we talk about in terms of ethical issues and also maybe public policies, how to regulate this kind of operations such that it would be more beneficial to the society.
Okay, regarding public policy, I see all this discussion on tariffs and automation bringing jobs from this country to that country and all that. Any type of contribution that the papers that we publish on MSOM can bring to educate or to help public decision makers on such topics?
Yes. So I'm just a journal editor, but I encourage my colleagues to look into these global supply chain issues. Right now, I think that the trade war or the tariffs actually create golden opportunities to examine how would this public policy affect how different corporations change the way they design the supply chain. So, for example, right now, the trade war between US and China actually triggered a lot of companies to consider Vietnam as an alternative. So I think that could be a good event studies or empirical studies to examine how this kind of public policy will affect the supply chain design and how does it affect the logistics operations in ocean freight and also air cargoes.
Do you have any best paper award at the journal?
We do. The best paper award is People's Choice. So basically, the editors select a subset of papers, and then we send it to all the members of MSOM Society members, and they vote on it. So it's a people's choice. So each year, we do select some of the best papers. Now, on top of that, we have other kind types of competition as well. So the first one I want to mention is called Practice Based Research Competition. So this one is biannual. We do this every 2 years, and actually, is the authors can submit articles that is based on the manufacturing or service operations that is conducted with the company or companies. So basically based on real applications. Then we have practitioner as well academic judges. So that we are running this the second time in Singapore at the MSOM Society in the 2 weeks time. So that is one competition. The other one is we do it biannually. We call data-driven research competition. So the first one was launched last year. This is in partnership with Alibaba. So actually, they provided 1 trillion data points for the entire supply chain for the online retailing. So our members can download to study how the e-commerce operations is done. So the next year we have one is sponsored by JD.com. So basically that is also, again, is the largest online retailer in China. So we do have this kind of annual competition to encourage our colleagues to do more relevant research work.
And only MSOM members can join this competition, or is it open, I mean, to the entire operations management?
It is open, but in order to access the data, because the data is housed at the cloud in China, so we have to restrict the data, and also they signed a non-disclosure agreement. So that means the data is not for commercial use, it's only for research use, and it's also for the papers submitted to MSOM, because we need to limit the access.
Okay. Let me get back to this idea of practice-based, because we just discussed something that was... the idea that something must be analytically sound, that must be rigorous to be considered for publication. And you have this particular piece that is a practice-based competition. It sounds pretty much, I'm sorry if I'm making an unfair comparison, but it looks like the robots competitions that they have in the engineering programs, that the students have to develop a robot and then they make it run, but it's not the main thing that the engineering department does in terms of research or teaching. Is it a secondary track? I couldn't understand. Is this paper that goes into the competition of the practice-based competition, it goes to a separate track? It's submitted differently? How someone can join the competition and can apply for his or her work for this particular competition?
Right. The process is slightly different because the criteria are different. For the traditional regular issues, the papers are not required to be implemented in the company. So for this competition, the project has been implemented or being used by a company. So that is a different criteria. And also that's with the criteria we judge based on that, besides the rigorous analysis, we also want to judge about the practical use of this particular research method. So let me give you one example. One of the winners last year, actually they study the blood drive program for the blood drive in Atlanta. So they have moving vans. They park the vans in different location, and hopefully people would go there to donate blood. But then they want to increase the number of blood donors. Then the Red Cross would like to ask these researchers from Georgia Tech to decide on where to put the vans that would improve and increase the number of blood donors. So what they did is that they collect the data of the blood donors in different locations and also look at the socioeconomic factors and the demographics in different locations. And they use machine learning techniques to identify new location. That means they never have the van that in that location, but they can use the machine learning to figure out where is a better place to put the van. And then they show that by using their approach, they actually increase the number of blood donors and the amounts of blood collected using the new locations of the van. So this is one good example.
Interesting. And the authors, they were professors, PhD students, MBA students, where they were at their...
Both. So in this case, is a student and professors, they work together with the Red Cross.
Okay, so that would be something like an outcome from an MBA project, for example, or not?
No, I think MBA students, many of them, they are not trained to do this kind of technical analysis for the machine learning. So this is the PhD students with the professors.
And regarding research, the regular research that you publish from day-to-day basis, any topics that you see that are appealing or trending these days, or anything that you would like to see more on the journal?
Yes. So I think that is for MSOM, I think that there are a lot of exciting topics that I will encourage my colleagues to explore. Of course, the topics such as sustainability, social responsibility, these are the really the important element that we should consider, because I think many corporations, they are no longer just focused on profits and also need to think about profit, people and planet. So that's one area. The other area I think is very exciting is also about technology, the impact of technology on society. So how technology affects the way we work, the way we communicate, the way we collaborate. So I think that is also very important. That is not well understood. So I think that I would like to encourage my colleagues to consider. And the next one is also the idea of Industry 4.0. In terms of we have so many new technologies, how does it really change the nature of our work and our job? To what extent is beneficial, to what extent needs to some regulations. So I think that is something we need to explore as well.
How the impact of MSOM changed over the years?
So I'm very happy to see that in terms of besides the number of submissions has really gone up, close to double. And I think that in terms of we also see there's an increase in the impact factor as well as the article influence score, because article influence score is not in terms of the immediate citations, is they trace the entire network of the citations. So I'm quite pleased to see that there's improvements along those dimensions. And also that is also, I'm very pleased to see that some of our papers also won awards selected by other independent units. So for example, we have a couple of papers was selected as the best industry-based sectors, industry sector study award paper. So the first paper, winning paper, is based on the study of Hugo Boss in terms of how the stock level, the inventory stock level, the fulfillments actually affect future sales of the firm. So that one won the best industry sector studies award. So this year, with another paper, is in the runner-up as study in terms of how hospital, how they manage the ICU units and actually improve the service quality of the patients. So that's one type. The other type of papers will also want the best social responsibility best paper is try to study the air and water pollutions in China and its impact.
The journal MSOM has initiatives to publicize these papers, or the authors themselves do their work and make them more relevant or impactful?
Basically, when I had the privilege to start the journal as an editor, I have developed a wiki page, and also that I have also blogs. So I invite the authors submit the blogs so that we can post on our website, and also we use LinkedIn and Facebook to promote their work as well. So I think that is also create a community, and also to share the findings and the research with not just the academic circles, it's also to the industry as well.
Most of the journals from societies have been struggling financially over time. I'm not sure exactly how does that happen with Informs. What is the future business model for journals?
That one I do not know, because I am not in charge of the budgets. But I think Informs, I think that they have been very successful. I think that we have, I think, close to 20,000 members. And then the conferences, they also make a lot of money. And I think that one also help out to support the journals. So I think financially, because we have a big umbrella under Informs with the biggest society in mentoring journals. So I think we're still doing fine now. But looking forward, I am more supportive of open access. And because I think that is the future. But I think that the current business model may need to change, may need to reconsider it, because whether it's sustainable or not, I do not know. But I think that moving to online publications or online access, I think that is a direction I think Informs need to consider.
I've heard some people complaining that there's this army of researchers working for free for the publication house, so the publishing, so the editors work for free, the reviewers work for free, the researchers work for free, and then in the end the universities have to pay for these publishing houses for having access to the paper. So that's seems unfair to most people. I'm not sure exactly how that fits in the future.
Yes, I understand. I think that's, I don't know you followed the news recently. University of California, has, no longer with a contract with Elsevier, because I think University of California professors, we contribute close to 40% of the content. But then the amount the publisher require University of California to pay is something we cannot afford to pay.
Do you gather any other evidences regarding the managerial contribution, the relevance of MSOM research for the managers?
I think that right now, I think with the blogs, I think that we force, we encourage our colleagues to work on work that's more relevant to practice. And also that I try to use different mechanisms, such as the practice-based research. Those are really, I also engage the practitioner judges. They also involved. And also with data-driven research. So this is basically partnership with a company. So I think that we are having different activities that engage practitioners as well. So I think that that is something we can do, but I think we can do much more.
That's interesting. I was when you were responding, I was thinking that maybe the model that you are looking for or striving to achieve is something that it's like a portfolio, right? I mean, you have the regular research stream with rigor and all the regular standards that we academics are used to apply to our work, and then you have separate measures. I mean, it seems that you are not mixing things or saying, okay, now you have to be good in both, or you have to have a paper that publishes something that is rigorous and relevant and so many things at the same time. So you are expecting, okay, you can be relevant, have a good relevance, but I would like to be an outstanding rigor, but then I want something that I expect some rigor, but it's a different type of rigor, and then I expect more of the relevance in those different initiatives.
Yeah, Yuri, you're absolutely right. I think that ideally, every single paper should have all the elements. But on that hand, it's very difficult to do. So I think that I want to create different channels for different, different colleagues. They can still contribute to the society. Now, even some of the theoretical papers has its own contributions as well. So we should not neglect that, because some of them actually could be provided more the framework and also more some new tools. So I think that they can contribute to different aspects, a different spectrum of the research work. So I think that's for the journal, I think we need to embrace both.
Okay, good. Thank you. So what about mixing OR and empirical? I find so hard sometimes discussing some research topics with my colleagues in the... I have an empirical background, and sometimes I find that some problems would be maybe better suited or fit better in an analytical or simulation or using other types of methods that I don't master, and I'd like to reach my colleagues in the OR side, the analytical simulation, and I find very hard talking with them. I'm being honest here. I don't know if that's a flaw in my training as a PhD back then or what, but I find hard to communicate. Do you think that is part of the explanation why it's so difficult to find papers that mix empirical and analytical work in the same piece?
Well, I think it's a chicken egg problem. I think that's for that kind of work, because I do that kind of work myself, and usually it's more difficult to be accepted. And here's why. If you use multiple methods, every single element has to meet the traditional domain criteria. So actually, it takes longer and more difficult, and the journey can be more painful. So I think that discourages people to do that. But I'm a fighter. So I always try to strive, because I want to work on things that I find interesting. It's not which journal I will end up. So let me give you one example that I'm working on. So my training is more on the analytical side. So this one is talk about transparency, whether a company should be transparent about the cost or the production process to the public. So we had the analytical models done, and the analysis done, but I didn't think it was good enough because there's no data. But because the analysis is about competition, it's very difficult to get data. Then I talked to my colleagues and said, we need to do some experiments, the lab experiments with the competition, but I don't know how. My partner didn't know how. But don't worry. So I go to different universities. I talk about the need. I'm looking for someone to help us. So finally, I found someone at Cambridge University. They found the topic very exciting, very interesting, and they work with us. So they conduct the experiment. So they contribute the experimental side that I know virtually nothing of, but I learn something from them. And they don't do analytical work, and also they learn something from us, because we use the analytical model as a hypothesis. Then they use a hypothesis, then they can conduct the experiment to validate whether it's true or not true. So we did that, but then of course the journal want us to do much more. So now they redo all the analysis and all the lab experiments. But my team is still continuing because they believe in what we're doing. So I think that is the key. But I think that is a matter of time. But I think that this kind of work, I believe in it, I think has more longer lasting value.
Comparing to the earlier volumes of the Manufacturing and Service Operations Management, what are the changes in expectations for the research methods or in terms of analytical models that you are witnessing over these years?
Well, I think that's... MSO was started in 1999. At the time, I think the focus is more on the analytical methods, and also the topics focus more on the manufacturing. But then, of course, the economic situation has changed, and also focus on service operation has changed, and also that the research method also has changed as well. So now I think people begin to see that is only focus on one method is also not the only way to do. So I think right now I see that is a there's a shift and also increase in the data analytic methods. empirical work as well as machine learning, because I think now data is more easily accessible, and also that is something that is can be more convincing. At least that I hope that the papers can be either motivated by some real setting or based on some real practice. So I think that will make the articles published in MSOM more relevant.
What paper or papers did you see recently published in your journal that caught your attention because of the ingenuity in the problem or in the methods?
Oh, there are quite a few number of papers on that. So one of them, as I mentioned, is the blood drive paper. I thought that was very interesting, and also new applications. Then the other one would be like in terms of the ICU in the healthcare, in the clinics, how the operations improve the quality and the patient outcome. And then the other types of papers would be like in terms of a paper on transparency, in terms of whether a company become more transparent, whether that will actually make the consumers more willing to pay a high price for that kind of processes. So I think that is actually address some of the new issues. And I think that if you look at some of the papers we published in MSOM recently, I think that we have more papers cover sustainability, social responsibility, and also that now I think that we're moving to a new area about gender equity in terms of income inequality. So I think that our journals become much broader, and I found it is very exciting, and also address some of the current issues as well.
I believe I've covered pretty much what I was expecting to cover here. I would like to know if you want to add anything.
Well, I think that I would like to have one more thought to share. I think that in terms of in research community, I think that we have too many silos. I think that we have too many subgroups. In my mind, I think that it would be good if there's any way to collaborate or to coordinate with other journals such that we can actually build a stronger and more connected research community. Because quite often, some of the issues we try to examine, they are similar, they're related. But then the question, how can we build the bridges such that we can actually facilitate mutual learning and mutual understanding? Because after all, research is about trying to examine the issues from different angles. So I welcome this kind of opportunity, and also would like to encourage my colleagues to do the outreach, just like what I'm doing now. So I think that is a good thing.
Thank you very much, Chris. Thanks for joining us today. I really appreciate that.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Listen to the Editors is an initiative of the Operations and Supply Chain Management Division of the Academy of Management. We post our interviews monthly in our division website. You can discuss any of the topics of this episode using our interactive tool, connect.aom.org. Using the discussion section of our site, you can also post suggestions for questions, journal editors you'd like to hear from, and requests for clarifications. You can also subscribe to our podcast in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or with the Podcast Addict app on Android. See you next month.